You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this.
Well, hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Delaine Benson, and we're going to talk about a time of significant change in her life that included what I'm calling an avalanche of crappy stuff happening around that time. Those are my words, not hers. You're going to hear her words in just a minute. We talk about the choices that she made during this particularly dark time and what things specifically impacted change in her life. One of the things that I actually think you're going to find helpful in this conversation is that Delaine was keeping pretty good track of what she was doing during this process. That's, I think, probably a piece of who she is if I was to get to know her more. And so there are a couple times in this conversation where we're talking about something and I actually ask her to rewind a little bit and talk about the steps that led up to the steps. So what were the actions before the actions and what came before that? And because she was taking notes about this process for herself, she's able to answer. And that's helpful, I think. And I think it'll be helpful for you because sometimes when we have the benefit of listening and learning other people's stories about how they made change in their life, it can be a little bit like asking grandma for her special family recipe. And grandma replies, "I just cook from the heart." And you think to yourself, well, okay, but that's going to be a tough recipe to follow. So with all that, let's get to the conversation. Delaine Benson, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat today?
I am so excited for this. Yes.
Yay, me too. All right. My very first question is always, what part of the world do you call home?
I am from Haley, Idaho. It's a beautiful place up in the mountains. Yes.
All right. So in the little state of Idaho, which is not, it's like, I guess like this. Where in the sticks? I don't know geographically. Whereabouts is Haley?
If you take really like the biggest, like meatiest part of Idaho, yeah, and we are right in the middle.
Okay, so like the bottom part, which is the wide part, as opposed to the little finger sticking up, you're in the middle of the bottom of Idaho. Okay, very good. I have been through briefly through Idaho. I've been to Boise on a trip, mm-hmm. and then I've been through like a corner of it driving through, but I haven't spent a lot of time. It's a beautiful state.
It is.
It's a beautiful state. Very, very pretty. All right. Next warm-up question. This episode is going to release right at the tail end, probably, of the first full week of January. And so that had me thinking as I was putting these questions together about many of the people who will be at that point, like white knuckling it through their resolution that they declared, you know, a few days before. And my question is for you on that thread, you know, not respective of resolutions, but for you, when you're in a situation where you feel like you might want to give up, and what on a project or anything, it can be really be anything. What is something that you might do to keep your motivation up and keep going?
I think that's a really interesting question. On one level, that is also the point where I dive in and say, is this really serving me? Is this fulfilling and all that? Because as we'll get into in my episode, I'm an overfunctioner. Like that's my programming. And so I just do everything because, and I don't necessarily have a reason. It's just because I'm supposed to, I should. But yeah, in those moments where you have the resistance, first, I think it's so important to evaluate that. And then beyond that, to if you decide, yes, like, this is what I really want to do. One thing is really looking for the fun in it. And that's something I'm really working on in my life, is finding more fun, finding ways to enjoy things. And so looking for the parts of the project that you're passionate about and how you can kind of play that out to make the project overall more fulfilling for you. And then my other thing, and again, this is based on my personal tendencies, I love to trend towards overwhelm. And I see this giant list of things to do, and I just shut down. My nervous system starts screaming and panicking. And even though I look perfectly calm on the outside, inside, I'm just going, oh my gosh, how am I going to get this all done? And the thing that I found that helps most with that is really calming yourself, maybe doing some deep breathing, and then writing the list of every single thing that needs to be done, and then just pick one thing that feels manageable that you can do at this point in time because of your time, because of your energy, whatever it is, And then just focus on the thing. Once it's done, then you find the next thing. And I find that's a great way to move through tasks because then it's not that huge carrying everything on your shoulders.
That was actually a master class in like how to get things done, believe it or not. So because you touched on a bunch of things. And these things so often, like, you know, in the work that I do, I am sort of in the self-help, self-development space. And a lot of times this stuff gets very, very reduced into quick little one-liners. And so you mentioned a couple of things that I really thought the way you phrased them were very effective. And you talked about when you're looking, does this still serve me? Sometimes that's phrased as what's your why, right? You know, and but why is a tricky question. It can sometimes be very helpful and it can sometimes not be helpful. It can sometimes be. And so does this still serve me is like a really great thing. So specific to like New Year's resolutions, when people start there, they're like, I'm going to go to the gym for 3 hours every day, from 4 to 7 every day, forever and ever. Amen. Right. And then, you know, taking that time, you reach the fifth day of that and you're like, my body hurts and I'm very, very tired. That is a perfect time to go back and be like, what about this really best serves me? And so, you know, and I think that's a great answer because you can be like, maybe I didn't need 3 hours from 4 to 7 since I
Truly.
also work the night shift, you know, like whatever's
Yes.
going on in your life, right? I think that's really good. So I thought that was very effective. I appreciate you answering that. I spring these questions for the audience that's listening and watching. I spring these questions on them at the very last minute. They have no time to prepare. It's off the cuff. So there we go. Today, you're here to share with us a story of a time when your life went through a major shift, is how I say it. And it begins with a season or a period of time where you shared with me a lot of things went wrong and collapsed around you in your life. So you did share with me that this started during the pandemic lockdown season of the timetable. I want to walk it back and first talk to you about what your life looked like before that. So if you and I go back to 2019, right? So the pandemic is not on the horizon. Share with us what life looked like at that time. And what I mean by what life looked like, I just mean like, what was the job that you had? What was your family situation? Who were you living with? Just those general kind of things.
Yes. So in 2019, I was a nurse in a hospital. I was working in post anesthesia, and I had really kind of gotten to a discontent point in my job at that point already. So we're setting the stage for how crazy this is going to get. But in that moment, I was already dealing with the challenges of the healthcare system and realizing how broken the healthcare system was, and getting extremely frustrated with how nurses were being treated and with how much the conditions of my job had fallen apart because of systems that were completely out of my control. And so, yeah, on the daily basis, I was really frustrated that I didn't feel like people were getting the care that they actually needed, the things that were going to even move them forward. I would just hear all these stories and think, like, this is what they need. That's not what they need. Or they don't need surgery. Why are they having surgery now? They should have tried this, this, and this. And just seeing things from a holistic perspective, it was really frustrating to just see these, let's cut them open and fix everything kind of robot mentality.
All
So I already
right.
had the discontent. I already had, like, they had taken so many things away from us. Like, I live in a more rural area, even though it actually is right by a ski resort. So there's a lot of money here, but there's also, it's a small hospital. And so we have to wear a lot of hats essentially at work. And I had to be a charge nurse. I had to be the unit scheduler. I had to do these different, like order some of the products that we needed that were kind of specialty that someone that wasn't a nurse couldn't order. And so it just starts building. There's all these extra jobs and responsibilities. And there was a time when the hospital compensated for those things. But of course, that had all been taken away in the last few years. So I'm still wearing 12 hats and I'm not being compensated for 11 of the hats.
Okay.
And that was really frustrating. And then just all of that was playing into the morale of the nurses. And where we had once had a very tight, really strong community of support and love and really looking out for one another, that environment had started to cultivate more of a survival mentality. And I think that everyone, their nervous systems had become so wrecked. We were all overextended, we were all overburdened. And And the theme that basically coming down through the system had been like, the more that you do, the more we're going to ask. The more that you give, the less you're going to receive. And so all of that played into us just feeling like we just have to survive in our little bubble throughout the day. And we're trying to still support one another. And we all still deeply care about one another, but we just can't give what we used to give. And so that was kind of my bubble of work and what that looked like. And then at home and socially and basically everywhere else in my life, I had put myself into a place where I was someone very deeply dependent upon, where I'm the rock. I am the person that if things are going bad, you know, you can come to me. You know, I will sacrifice my time and whatever it is that I have going on for you. And I didn't realize the implications of this. I did not realize that being the strong one, being the one everyone can depend on, the toll it was taking on me and the degree of self-abandonment that I lived in. And this was, of course, all building towards everything that happened in the pandemic. But at that point, I still hadn't realized it. I just simply thought, man, a lot of people really depend on me. I feel pretty overextended, but I'm still managing. So it's fine. Let's keep going, keep pushing
So,
forward.
all right, so let's we're gonna it'll probably come up, but tell us about your family, like structure,
Yeah.
like so who you live
So
with and stuff.
I am married to a lovely human. He is very much on the self-development path with me, fortunately, because of everything he went through. And his story was he went through some traumatic brain injuries. One was a just silly household accident, and then another was a mountain biking accident, and they were close together.
So,
And
secondary concussion syndrome.
correct, yes. And so he really went into the deep of mental health challenges and just all sorts of other things that rippled out because of that. And he even, you know, discovered that he had PTSD. He realized he had ADHD. There were all of these different layers that we uncovered once we started to figure out what was going on with him. And then I do have one stepson, and at the time he was in middle school.
All
And
right.
yes, we have a I'm really lucky on this. I have a wonderful relationship with him and we're very close. I met him when he was six, and that seemed to be a good time to come into his life and build a relationship with him. And there wasn't too much resentment or you're not my parent kind of thing. We just hit it off early on, and I think it's because we're a lot alike and we have a lot of similarities. So that helped for sure.
Very cool. So you're in a family. You've got a stepchild. You've got a spouse. You've got before this all happens, you've got family. You've got parents. Are you an only child? Do you have siblings?
I have one sibling, one
I have a
brother.
sibling. All right. Very cool. So one of the things that so I have two questions before we talk about the avalanche of collapse. So one of them is if you and I had met for coffee in like 2019, if we were friends, and I had just asked you, like, hey, how you doing? Are you happy? What would at that point, how would you have answered? Not now, knowing the having done the work you've done, but back
Yes.
then, how would you have presented it, do you think?
Back then, I would have been honest about the work struggles and said that that's work is really starting to get to me. I'm really getting frustrated. But then everything else, I would have said, oh, and everything else is great. It's all good. It's all good. Like, sure, there's 50,000 pounds of pressure on me, but it's all good. Yeah, we're great.
All right, that's I so I mean I it's what I would have guessed if you would have said because I just based on that, one of the things I want to call out is that you said the way you told this story was really, really interesting, but it shows something that we'll talk more about. It shows that you've done a lot of work on this process because you said that you had put yourself in a situation and taking ownership of the situations in our life is it's a long road to get there because in the middle of it, for most of us, it feels like this is just happening to me. Like I don't know how and I don't
Truly.
know what. So I just wanted to draw that out and say that I heard it. I heard you in there doing the work. All right. It was a super public strain and very newsworthy during lockdown and during the beginning of the pandemic, the overwhelming strain and just of the crisis of the pandemic in hospitals. And so I think that many of us know, and so you were a nurse at that time, even though you were in a rural area, I think that's a thing that we all have a lot of pre-built visuals and understanding of what was going on. I will add, which you sort of said that as I was writing down the questions, I don't think nursing was an easy job before that. And so, you know, so it, like you were leading to, it's like you were already tapped out on this system that was, it is very well publicized, is fracturing, doesn't work very well for the patients in a lot of conditions, with the obvious exception that we're all very happy when doctors save and nurses save our lives and the work that they do. Those two things are happening at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. You had a lot of other things, though, happen in addition to being an overworked nurse in a global pandemic that made life even tougher. You mentioned that your husband was going through this traumatic brain injury stuff and you guys were learning about that as you went. What are some of the other things that were going on at this time that just piled the weight onto you in your life?
Yeah. And are you referring specifically to like once we had slipped into the pandemic?
Yes. And, I jumped forward into the pandemic. I did. Yes.
Yes. Yes. I just wanted to confirm. Yeah. So the pandemic, it did hit me in a different way as opposed to some of the, I guess, your typical nurses, especially when I think of like my old friends who worked in cities and things like that. Being rural, and being where we are, so we're a big tourist spot. And when the pandemic hit our state, it was so bad in our community because everybody travels. I mean, there were literally people flying in from China. Like, I have friends who work at the airport. There were people flying in from China and from all these like international places right before everything's hitting. So when we got hit hard because everybody went home seeing something's happening and they came here.
And it would have been the height of ski season. Yeah,
exactly. And it was also all these second homeowners were like, we're getting out of the city. We're coming here. So the community got so sick so fast. We actually shut our hospital down except for the ER.
Wow.
And they were just pulling as many nurses as they could into the ER. And I got really lucky in that case that I kind of got pulled into more of an administrative position in all of this because I got exposed. And so I was put on quarantine, but I didn't actually come down with COVID. And so that was kind of the unique twisting of all of it, how it played out. And so when that happened, I got more put into places of like helping people figure out where to go, what are we doing, all of that. So it was very stressful in the way that like I was responsible for like in these meetings, helping people decide, like, are we sending these people to the ER? Are we doing this? Are we doing that? And that wasn't a position that I felt comfortable doing. And, you know, just I didn't want to have to be responsible for these kind of things. And my managers were excellent in doing everything that they could. It was just we were all trying to figure things out on a daily basis. And so what it ended up being is like I was on call for, I don't even remember how many hours a week. It was days and days on end a week. And that was really the thing that I was having to do is just more sit at home, be on edge of I'm on call for emergency surgeries. And that's where I am. So yeah, that was challenging. Then the my stepson's school also shut down. All the schools shut down here. And so that was kind of layer number two. And then in the chaos of all of this, my father was suddenly diagnosed with two separate types of cancer. Which is incredible in itself, but then it was during the pandemic. So he can't get his biopsies done. He can't get any of the care that he needs. And we know things have gone poorly and they're basically telling us he has cancer, but you can't do anything about it right now because pandemic. And I live on the other side of the country from him. I actually grew up in Texas. And so I really wanted to be a part of his care. So I was trying to phone into any appointments that he could get. I would try to be on the phone on speakerphone so that I could play a part and just make sure that I was advocating well for him and he was getting the care he needed for what we could do at the time. And then the final icing on the cake, which was so huge, and I didn't even realize it at the time, but I had started perimenopause too. And so I had a whole extra set of challenges physically, emotionally, mentally, all of it. And I didn't even know where it was coming from. And I felt so deep in survival mode that I didn't even know which way to go, which way was up, what was happening, and that I might even have this phase of life affecting me as well.
That is so, I mean, it's so surprising, but It's so not surprising, actually. I mean, I think that perimenopause, menopause sneaks up on people no matter what. But everybody who's watching and listening in the audience that lived through the lockdown, they can put pieces of this in their own life that we experienced. You know, we had people who come home from school. We had jobs that we were trying to figure out. It was chaos because we were trying to do something that nobody else had ever done, ever in the history of ever. And so everybody's doing their best. None of us are doing a great job because, but it is the best that we can all do. And everything was a surprise. So, you know, there was stress, there was anxiety, there was trouble sleeping. Well, all of those are symptoms of perimenopause, so they overlap. Like, of course you wouldn't, you know, fatigue, you know, low energy, all of those things. No wonder, you know, you didn't notice it at first. But yeah, that's a lot of things. It reminds me, as I was listening to your story, or as I was planning this out, reading about your story, the Morton Salt slogan, which is like, when it rains, it pours. It was like you just had like thing after thing after thing coming on. So you're let's go back, and I want to ask you a question about you, your career path and your life path when you were younger. What drew you to nursing as a profession? Because I think it's interesting that you find yourself in this situation where you're working in a medical facility. You've got two very important people in your life who are experiencing medical challenges outside of your job. So, like, you know, so in some cases, you know, like, so tell, what drew you to nursing?
Well, I think that my path to nursing really was essentially a path of like the story of my being and of who I am, truly, because it starts all the way back in childhood. And I had a childhood that was filled with love, so much love, but also really high standards. And my parents were super hardworking. They still are, even at their age. They're hardworking. They're kind. They're stoic. They give a lot to their community. And so, although there was all the love there, for my generation in particular, I feel that there was so much attention and praise that came from performing well, that came from making good grades, behaving well, winning competitions, being good at athletics. And so there was this like implicit lesson of if you do really well, we see you, we love you, we're going to celebrate you. And that started this kind of wheel of looking for external validation as my means of self-worth. And then I also had a lot of themes of self-abandonment that I learned as a child as well. My grandmother was very mentally ill, and my mom was the only one of her children that lived close to her, like very close to her. We were in the same town. And so a lot of the messaging that I received was don't upset her, be nice, keep the peace. Even if she says something really crazy to you, just go with it. And that message to me was okay, suppress what you're feeling and always try to protect her. And even though it started in that one little isolated event, it started to kind of pull out into others and really make me start to abandon myself. And then it went a little deeper even. I remember another incident that I had a relative that made me extremely uncomfortable. And he always seemed like he had a mask on when he was in front of the adults. And he was very careful with his behavior in front of them. But then when the adults were gone and the children were around, then he kind of showed his true side, and he was pretty nasty and would say inappropriate things to us. And as that, like in that relationship with him, I was always told again, be nice to him. Why aren't you talking to him? Why don't you go give him a hug? And it wasn't that anybody was intentionally trying to hurt me or trying to do something wrong. They just didn't know how I felt. And I had already gotten to that place of it's not safe to say how you feel about it. So just go hug him and ignore whatever's coming up inside and the fact that your gut is screaming, no. And yeah, just go do that. And so I started to hear all of these themes of like self-abandonment, of high achievement. And then the final piece that played into who I became and becoming a nurse was this theme of like through my upbringing, it was very much based in religion, and both within my church and within my community itself, it was a very religious community. And
In
the thing
Texas,
that
I'm shocked.
I, right?
Who would have thought?
Who knew? But yeah, the religion taught me generosity, and that phase of life taught me to be generous. But there were a lot of sub messages that really I kind of took the wrong way. And so I took that being good meant sacrifice. And then I also learned that, and this is kind of how I interpreted a lot of things, is like I felt like I was so often trying to like do good for others that I became a little bit too enmeshed in like performing for that feeling good. Like I wanted to do good things, but I wanted somebody to see me because I wanted to feel good about it and get that self-worth ping and that dopamine, all of that. I wanted all that to come in. And so that was like the final piece of my whole overfunctioning picture. It was to get safety, love, and belonging. I need to be perfect. I need to be high achieving, and I need to be giving constantly of myself and just completely abandoning whatever my needs are, whatever my feelings are, and just being there for everyone. And so that trifecta kind of played into, so I became a nurse. I wanted to do good. I wanted to help people. I wanted to save the world, all these idealistic things that I had in my head.
Absolutely.
And then that's what I see so often. Nurses are almost categorically all of those things: perfectionist, people pleasers, overachievers. There's very few exceptions to that.
Yeah, and I'll give it some vocabulary so that the people who are listening know sort of what this is in a bigger context outside of your individual story. Like, so when we talk about this, there's a concept of an unspoken social contract within communities. And a family is a community, a church congregation is a community, a town is a community, country is a community, all of those things. So what I hear you saying is that and you're unaware of these rules because they form when you're very, very small and everyone around you is operating under these things. So the unspoken social contract that was happening as you were growing up is based that you are rewarded and punished based on your behavior, with regards to, your grandmother and the other people around, very heavily rewarded high achievement, and it penalized certain sites of behavior. And that's how you drew and created your concept of worthiness. And that's how we all draw it, right? Like that's how we all draw it. And unless somebody looks at you and defines it more clearly, and it's not, that's the way it works. That's the way the human experience comes together. And then what happens in a lot of ways, and you hear about this now, is that in like a societal context, if the unspoken rules of the contract we think we agreed to aren't rewarded or don't seem like they're working, that feels very destabilizing. So, like the big one that is in the news all the time right now is the hey, I thought I was supposed to be able to work till I was 65 and retire and it was going to be fine. And a lot of people right now in 2025, 2026 are right there at that age and they're like, well, whoops, life got very expensive. If I stop working, I'm going to be broke. So, like that's an example of it not breaking. So, in yours, you came to realize as a part of this process that you were you your contract was I will work myself to death and just not ever pay attention to myself. So, when you think back to this time before you became aware of this, when you were in the dark part of this before you were doing the work and became aware of it, do you remember how it felt? Like on a day-to-day basis, like what was the physical experience that you, as you would describe it now, that was like something is wrong?
Yeah, I think it can be very hard for someone who particularly has my tendencies. So my presentation of a dysregulated nervous system is a freeze response. So for people who aren't familiar, like when we think of a nervous system dysregulation, the language that everyone uses are fight or flight. We hear fight or flight, fight or flight, fight or flight. But what I find, especially with high achieving women, is we fall more into the category of a freeze response often, not always, but that's true for me. So, and I kind of described it right in the very beginning of the call of just this calm exterior that looks all put together. You wouldn't know anything's wrong. You wouldn't have any idea anything's going on. But there are gears going inside, going and going and going, worrying, anxiety, looking at all the different paths that this could take. And I saw all of this as being prepared, right? Like anxiety, I don't have anxiety. I'm just like making sure nothing goes wrong. So I'm repeatedly going over the 35 things that could happen from what this one decision, and then trying to decide exactly what the best decision is. I didn't see that as anxiety, but how I like to describe this state is an overwhelming, insane amount of energy being expended inside, and then just looking calm and cool on the exterior. And that's what's so problematic. And that's one of my biggest reasons for wanting to be on podcasts, wanting to spread the word about this, is so that other high achieving women can recognize this in themselves. Because for the longest time, I was functioning like this. I was in survival mode, but I never would have told you that. I
Yeah.
never would have said anything's wrong. It was just, my life is complicated. It's hard, but I'm kind of amazing and I got this. Like, I got this. And it wasn't like thinking like I'm amazing in this, oh, I have all this ego. It's just like I've been brought up to be amazing and to be able to manage all the things so I can do it, and that's what I do, and it's cool. And yeah, I have no questions about it. And I think another thing too that plays into this too is the ignoring all of your feelings, your emotions, like you've self-abandoned for so long, you don't even know what your feelings are at this point. You
Right.
don't even know what
And
you
you don't
get.
know you're
Like,
abandoning the feelings. You don't know you're not experiencing them.
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And until especially women get into a really deep, dark place that they are so depressed and exhausted and just feel like they have no purpose, no joy, no energy, until they get to that point, they don't get help.
Yeah.
And that's what I wish that we could see this phase in us a little earlier. We could see these tendencies, because then you wouldn't have to go all the way to the bottom like I did, and then slowly work your way up. But yeah,
No, I think that's an
it's really
important
hard.
point because, yeah, and I think so. I would point out, like, I don't think that people know they're frozen when you put that, because freezing can look like research, it can look like planning, it can look like list making, and you can feel very busy. And sometimes you need some. It takes a while for somebody to point out, like, oh, hey, you're not actually doing anything. And that can also feel mean when you realize that, when somebody points it out to you or asks. Another place this shows up in conversation, people say, you know, people be stuck and frozen, and they're in the middle of a stress response, and a friend will not mean to be harsh, but they'll be like, well, you could just do it, or why don't you do it, or why haven't you done this, or all you have to do is this. And that can feel very confrontational, too. I think that's my
Oh, I
opinion. So, yeah.
absolutely agree.
And I think that one of the things, like right now, information is really siloed. And when I say siloed, what I mean is it's categorized, right? And so, you know, if stepmothers tend to group with stepmothers, divorcees can group with divorcees, people who are in perimenopause tend to listen to midlife sort of things, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. It's very, very good. But the challenge is, right, that the best time to learn about these things is when you're like 20 or 15, right? And so
100%.
then the work becomes to like cross these like age demographics and you know, pass this information down so that people are ready. One of the things I wonder, because I don't know if I'm the same age you or not, but I have this impression that people were not talking about menopause when I was younger. But at the same time, I hold this reality in my head that it's entirely possible that they were. I just was in a different room. And if I, you know, because I was younger and, you know, going to concerts and traveling, and I don't know whether, you know, like, for example, like people used to always say, oh, they didn't teach this to me in high school. And I now look back and I'm like, you know what? It's possible I wasn't paying attention. If we're totally honest, it's very possible there was a lesson and I just was gossiping in the back of the classroom, you know, like, so
So true.
there we go. All right. So in the moment, you were trying to rise to the challenge and you felt like, you felt responsibility and obligation, and that it was your job to carry on and work harder. So in the pitch, you share that your shift began to occur during a breath work session. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that in a second. I have a question because I think that means that you had begun this work on yourself. Like, so being in the breath work session says to me, oh, at some point there was a decision that happened before that, right? So the question that I have then is,
When and how did that come about? How did you make the choice to do the work of working on yourself and the self-discovery, self-reflection, and breath work when you were under all this stress? Tell us how that came about.
Yeah, so it was really interesting because I had started trying to learn about nervous system regulation and learn about self-development, but being my personality type, I was doing it all to help my husband, to
Okay.
help him get through the traumatic brain injuries. So once again, it was that complete dissociation from like what's happening in me, who I am, who I'm being. It was I'm not looking at that. It's just, oh, I need to learn this nervous system regulation stuff because it's really going to help my husband and I can teach him and that's going to help him move forward. Oh my gosh. So until that really bottom of the road, dark, dark phase that I went through during the pandemic, I didn't touch any of that on my own. I just learned it and taught him about it and took classes on it, went to workshops. So I had already built up a decent skill set. It was still very much in the early stages, but I knew quite a bit, but had not done any of the work myself. And so that was when I started to think, ooh, you know what? I think maybe this is for me too. And honestly, it was part of that understanding I was in freeze that kind of broke that open to start that pathway of, oh, I need to understand more about this freeze response. What does that mean? Because I've always thought that I've been super productive, but it turns out I'm actually in this really odd state that makes you feel like you're doing all the things and really high functioning and doing very well and you're not. And so I started to kind of deep dive into that. And then the more you learn, the more you realize, wow, everybody needs to learn about this. And so that started to play into old desires I'd had from decades before. Because I had also been a massage therapist. I had also done energy work. Like I'd been doing energy work for like 20 years. So like Reiki,
Yeah.
I eventually learned healing touch. But I had looked at all of these beautiful things and I'd never really put it all together into something that I could actually do. I was passionate about them. I enjoyed them. But that's when I started to feel this call of not only do I need this work and I need it desperately, but also, I think this is the path forward. I think this is a path where I actually help people and not just do all the nonsense and check off the boxes in the hospital and don't really do anything for them and just get a paycheck. And so I started to both take classes for my own enjoyment and then also for a new career path. And I got into it's a new type of nursing, relatively new. I think it's probably been around for about 12 or 13 years now that it's actually been a big thing, but it's nurse coaching. So it's registered nurses who already have this big solid foundation of work and of studying things. And then they can go get a certification in coaching. And then for me, I then added the emphasis of I'm really moving into nervous system regulation and all of that and mental wellness. And so that was my path to kind of bounce through all of these trainings and again, all of them have all of this deep work that you have to do personally to
Yeah.
actually get the benefits. So I was doing that and doing that. And then what led to breath work was a conference that I went to, and it was for just nurse coaches, and it was a mentorship program that I was in. And we had all these events that we were doing. They were all very deep self-development. And one of the instructors was offering this breathwork session, and they didn't say that much about it. And I was curious, so I thought, okay, well, I'll go to this. And I went into the breathwork session, and it absolutely blew my mind of what is possible. And yeah, what's possible in healing, what's possible in a sober state to do with your mind. Because this type of breath work leads to a different state of consciousness. And as a result of the rapid breathing that we were doing in the session, I was able to all of a sudden have this third person perspective of my life. And I could see that here's my rut that I'm in. And it was like I was looking down into it. And I could see all of these things that had led to me getting in the rut, that were keeping me in the rut, and I could even see paths out. And the theme of all of it, above and beyond everything else, was that it turned out, and I had no idea, I was a control freak. And of course, all the work that I've done, this makes perfect sense now. But at the time, I didn't know that. And I didn't realize how much, like, essentially all of my energy, all of my just everything I did on a daily basis was trying to exert control on my external environment to make me feel safe.
To keep the nervous
And
system calm, sure.
exactly. And so I was trying to control my husband. I was trying to control my stepson. I was helicopter momming him. I was trying to control my in-laws. I was trying to control my parents. I was trying to control every aspect of life. I mean, work, everything. And I could see the control as like a plaque on me. I was just covered in this plaque that was control. And while I felt the control was giving me safety, it was actually the thing that was keeping me from living a beautiful life and thriving. And so the final part of the breathwork session was me breaking out of that plaque and just finally letting it just shatter around me and even like soak into the earth. And it was a remarkable experience and something I didn't even think was possible. And that started a whole new trajectory of, yes, nervous system is my thing. I'm going to help women understand all of these freeze responses and all these things that we do. But then breath work as a means to help you break out of it really spoke to me. And so that's why I started to then pursue breath work and learning everything I possibly could about that.
All right, so we're going to come back to breath work in a second, Delaine, but I want to go deeper, a teeny bit deeper on this story. So at this point, you mentioned you are working on yourself, you're examining your identity and your role in the larger picture of your family and your community. At the time you go to this conference, it sounds like you already had become aware that you were experiencing the freeze response. So, as on your pitch, you said, and I'm not sure if I have the timing right, so you can correct me. You said, the year became a reckoning. The collapse from my overfunctioning collided with the hormonal and emotional shifts of midlife, forcing me to see that my people pleasing and perfectionism weren't strength. They were survival patterns that no longer served me. And I realized I couldn't keep living in constant crisis mode. So, the question is, do you like a little bit more about how you came to understand that you were overfunctioning and people pleasing and in the freeze mode? Was it something you realized just on your own that was like putting pieces together from your research, or was it something that somebody outside, that a mentor or a coach or a therapist or a coworker pointed out to you? Like, how did you become aware of that?
It was really piecemeal in figuring all of those pieces out. I think that generally speaking, a lot of it came from my trainings. They weren't necessarily talking about the people pleasing and perfectionism, but they were more talking about patterns that we get put into. And so that's where I started to see like this, I started to see this theme of overfunctioning. And then through all of my different studies, it was kind of like, oh, perfectionism. I'm seeing ties from freeze response and overachieving to this and to nervous system. And I just started drawing all of these little lines. And that is, I haven't studied human design or anything like that, but I did get a reading once just because I was curious about it. And it is fascinating. And my reading was that that is my number one gift is drawing lines between patterns. And that, and so that's it feels like that was kind of a natural progressive thing that I did just because I love patterns. And that's always been my thing. And yeah, it continues to even be. Like when I think I've got this all figured out, then I go and study something else. And then I draw 10 more lines from the pattern. And I think, oh my gosh, there's another layer to this. And that's what's so beautiful is that you keep discovering the next layer. Every time you get something kind of figured out, which it's really not, then you get to discover, okay, here's the next pattern.
So, and sometimes people say it's like peeling an onion, which I think is a terrible metaphor because there's not a prize in the middle of the onion, but it
No.
does have layers. And the thing that I, for the folks that are listening, that I think that is helpful about this is that this was you on your journey of life, researching things, picking up certificates, and beginning to see pieces of you reflected back in what you were learning and put it together. It wasn't that you
opted in to be coached by some, you know, guru who then said, this is your diagnosis. And so, which is another way to do it. It works both ways,
absolutely.
But that's the way so I appreciate you giving that reflection. All right. So let's talk about breath work, because show has a broad audience. People have a lot of different perspectives. And I want to take a moment and bring us all to the same page and have you share with us what you mean when you say breath work. Because I think for a lot of people, we're thinking of, like, you know, three deep breaths. So,
right. That is the common conception. And there's such benefit in that too. I'm going to talk about my specialty, which is transformative journey breathwork.
Okay.
However, I don't want to minimize the power of simply feeling your body, taking deep breaths, and what that can do for your mental state at any given moment. But that's my little side thing. What I specialize in, as I said, is transformative journey breathwork. And it is, again, a study of a bunch of different breathwork traditions. And then I kind of made the patterns that I saw that I loved and that I felt were the most beneficial, and also wanted to make it trauma-informed so that it's not something that's overwhelming for people to experience. And I kind of put it together into my own thing.
Okay.
And essentially it is, and it's like most deep down, what really happens in your body is, it's a form of hyperventilation. It's perfectly safe to do. But when you do this, it can lead you into a different state of consciousness. And by that, which is extremely hard to explain if you haven't felt it before, it essentially means that you're turning off what I like to call your day-to-day brain. And most of us were in this survival mode. We're in checking off the boxes and we're just go, 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 go. It's helping a lot of that kind of take the back seat and moving into a beautiful exploration of, where are you now? What are you feeling now? It can be feelings. It can be colors. It can be images. It can be all sorts of things that come up when you do this. And a lot of it is also a process of learning as well. Like the first time I did it, I had a really incredible experience, but that's not the case for everyone, because, and this kind of hints into something that you had been talking about, I'd already been doing work on myself. I'd been doing self-development work. And so I had no resistance to opening myself up to this experience, really breathing hard and seeing where it takes me. And I have people from every end of the spectrum. I have some that come in, they've done no self-development work. They just heard that this is really interesting and they want to explore a different form of consciousness. So they show up and they may have the big wild experience, or they may just see some beautiful colors and feel really relaxed by the end of the session.
Okay.
So that's what's so challenging about it, is that every session is different. Every person is different. And you can't have any type of expectation on it. It's simply a way of turning off some of the parts of your brain that can govern safety, can govern your daily life, letting them just chill out and have a really incredible experience that, the way I frame it, is very healing for you. It could be relaxing. It could be showing you a bit of insight. It could be letting go of pent up emotions. That's a big one with my overachieving women, because I tend to draw a lot of them in for that experience. And it's, we've stuffed things down and stuffed things down and stuffed things down. And now you can actually let some emotions flow. And through all of it, the process is working toward helping you be able to be present in your body, helping you to see your patterns, your challenges, so that you can work on them. And overall, my goal for people is just to get them to a point where, through this work, they can start to see more joy and more ease in their life, and even connecting to their purpose. And so that's kind of what we shoot for. But my apologies, because it is really difficult to explain.
No, I think so. I mean, I think that was good. I think it was. All right. How is your life different today? We're going to talk about what you do today as a career and stuff like that. But before we do that, how is your life different today than it was in 2021? How has the decision to go on this journey and the choices you made, how has that impacted actual change in your life?
That's a great question, and it's really interesting too. I recently had a session with a coach that I see privately, and I had been working with her for 2 years, and she said she wanted me to compare 2 years ago to my current situation. And the really interesting conclusion that we came to was I am completely out of the hospital now. I'm
Okay.
self-employed, so there's a lot more uncertainty in my life. There, my income is not quite replacing my nursing income yet. It's getting there, but still a work in progress. Benefits, that's stressful, especially with everything happening with the healthcare exchange, and all of that. Okay, there's another layer of stress. And then, like, essentially everything else is kind of the same. But that being said, I am completely different, and my interpretation of everything is completely different. So even though I'm making less money and I have a lot more stressors, if you just look at it through a financial lens,
Sure.
I feel incredibly abundant. I feel very lucky to have the things, the privilege that I do. And that would not have been what I would have told you all that time ago. I would have said every day is so stressful. I don't know how I'm going to make all this work. I don't know how I'm going to balance everything. It seems like it's just one bad thing after another. And instead, my view has completely changed to no, this is beautiful. I am so privileged. And of course, I have challenges. I acknowledge those, but I feel so lucky to be where I am and so happy to be working toward my purpose and have so much more ease and so much more joy and be present. Oh, there's a huge one. Being present with my family. That's another thing I never did. Everything was so achievement oriented that I couldn't be comfortable sitting with my family back then. If we were sitting and watching TV together, I was horrified at the fact that, like, I'm just sitting and not doing anything. So I would need to be finding a task to do or even doing a craft or doing something because I've got to be busy and staying busy during this time. And I would be so checked out of spending quality time with my stepson, spending quality time with my husband. And that has completely shifted now. And when I'm with them, because I'm so intentional with my time, it's like work time is work time. It stays in that bubble. And then I draw a close to it. And then family time is family time. And it's all in. There's no phone. There's no distraction. There's no project. There's no thing that I need to do. It's just really deeply connecting with them heart to heart. And that all has played out to just be so much more happy in all of my relationships.
That is
And
fantastic.
yeah, it's lovely.
That you very clearly explained, because sometimes, I mean, you mentioned that describing the work of breath work was difficult to describe, but sometimes transformations be difficult to describe. And I think you did a
Right.
great job. All right. So in a second, we're going to do the final questions, but I want to give you a chance to tell people. You mentioned that you're out of the hospital, you're in business for yourself. I want to give you a chance to tell people specifically what you do these days and how they can connect and follow you online.
Great, thank you. Yeah, so I have a business now that has essentially two parts. One part is I teach that transformative journey breath work. I do classes and workshops, both in person in my local community and online. And I explore a variety of different topics, but often they are focused on self-development, on these patterns that we see within women. I do a lot that are very female focused. And I do have ones that are just for people who are curious about breath work, and it's men and women are invited, all of that. So it's a little bit of a spectrum of different things. And then on the other side, I do coaching that is very specific to helping the perfectionist, people pleasing, and overachieving women move out of overwhelm. And it is the deep work that I had to do to get to this point, to see the patterns, become aware of them, and then start to do all the interventions that you need to do to move out of that stage, and then be able to feel joy, be able to get your energy under control, where you're not just exerting all your energy on everything but you. And to even learn how to feel your feelings, learn how to decide how you feel about whatever it is. Because that's like so many of the women that come in, they don't even know what they want. I say, "What do you want?" I have no idea. Well, we're going to get you to that point. It's just going to take time to help you feel comfortable and safe in your body. And then you get to start to feel into those things that you want and need. And so, yeah, that's my other bit of work. And I do that work virtually exclusively.
All right, very good. Shout out your website so that people can, who are listening will hear it. It will be in the show notes and all of those places, but go ahead and tell us where people can find you.
So my website is, I'll just spell it.
You can
It's
just say it
www.
because the link will be
Oh,
in
it'll
the.
be linked there. Yeah. So it's www.delainebensonwellness.com. And that
Okay.
does have all of my social media links on there too.
Perfect. All right. So you have a special offer for the audience, which is called Breathe Your Way Back to Joy and Balance. It's a virtual transformative breathwork class. You can use the code ImperfectAdulting at checkout to join one live breathwork class of your choice completely free, which is a very generous offer. Thank you very much. There's a
Thanks.
link in the show notes, which is to Delaine Benson Wellness. I totally recommend that people look in the show notes, but also subscribe to the Imperfect Adulting email newsletter, because then the links just come straight into your email box and you can click on them, which is really great, especially with Delaine's name, because the spelling is maybe not what you think it'll be. So there
Exactly.
you go. That is a very generous offer. I want to say thank you very much for that. Delaine, are you ready for the final three questions?
I'm ready. Let's
All
do
right,
it.
let's do it. Do you have a favorite streaming network or app for TV and movies? And if so, what's your first choice?
I feel like lately I've been on an Apple
Okay, Apple TV.
binge. Yes.
Yeah. That's like
Yeah.
there's a lot. There's a lot.
There's a lot.
There's a
There's
lot.
so
And
many
it
good
depends.
things.
There's a lot. And they seem to change. Like it's like
Right? Yes.
the worst is when you find one and you go and they're like, you have to log in or open your account. You're like, I'm really sure I'm already paying for this. What would the password
Yes.
be? All right. So if you go to the grocery store hungry, which is a thing that they tell us not to do because we overbuy, what is one temptation or indulgence that is likely to end up in your shopping cart? Is it going to be chips, candy, wine, cookies? What's your grocery store kryptonite when you end up hungry? End up there hungry.
It would 100% be chocolate.
Chocolate. That's okay.
Yes.
There you go. All right. Now, have you ever purchased anything off of social media, like off of an app? And if so, what was the product? And did you like it? Was it a good purchase or not?
My gosh, I purchased so many things off of it. It's like my guilty thing. I feel like they know me. Like, how did they get in my head? Oh my gosh, what is the, I'm trying to think of a good one. Of course, I can't think of anything right now. The only thing I can think of is I did get a it's a planner that
Okay.
has just beautiful art, and it has lots of, it's a soulful woman calendar. And
Okay.
so it has like all this beautiful art, and then it has great quotes and that are inspirational and kind of feeling that soul within you. And so yeah, that's the one I can think of
There you
most
go. And
recently. Yeah.
social media fed that to you, and you're like, yes, please send it to me right away. I love it. All
Exactly.
right. That's it. Delaine Benson, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself. Head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it.
And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.